Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Family of Faith, a Faith Bible Church podcast about God's design for the family, with your host and pastor of Family Ministries, Paul Funchess.
Hey, this is Family of Faith, the podcast by Faith Bible for Faith Bible, and we are here in the studio again. It's been a couple weeks.
Well, it's been a week.
Well, it feels like forever. Because not me and Seth, but my wife just had our eighth child, William Zion, and William is doing well.
Christy's named after Zion Williams.
You know, I have had so many people say, you just named him that because of Zion Williamson. And they say, oh, look, Zion Williamson, he's your son. Look at that. What you did. I'm like, that, well, I'm not that clever. We liked the name Zion a long time ago, and William for William Wilberforce. So, I've said that before. William Wilberforce is one of my, heroes, and, read a lot about his life. And so William and then Zion. And so I have a daughter named Eden. And I have a son named Zion, which is a not so subtle way of communicating my biblical theology. So he's doing well. Christy's doing really well. And I took a week off to be with them. And so we're back in the studio today talking about teenagers today.
Finally getting back to our Stages of Parenting series.
Yeah, we've been over the summer, obviously didn't do it. And then, this semester, we haven't entered into that. We have gone all the way through the childhood years. We've been using, again, The Faithful Parent by Martha Peace and Stuart Scott. Stuart Scott was just here a few weeks ago for the Transform Conference.
Yep.
We're able to do a podcast with him, which was kind of fun. He's written this helpful book called Faithful Parent, and we would recommend it to anybody. It's really clear. It goes through the different stages and ages of parenting and kind of takes the principles of raising your children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, takes it all the way through those stages and gives some real practical helps. And then towards the end of the book, it gives some practical help to people who are in special cases or kind of at the end of their rope and needing some encouragement. So just a really good book. I would recommend it to you if you're a parent or if you're thinking about being a parent one day. You know, this is a good book for you to have if you're looking for a good book on parenting. So there's another resource I want to let you know about. If you are a family that have youth in your home, that is grades 7 through 12, we're doing a resource every week called Youth Sermon Preview. We release it every Wednesday. And what it is it's me and Josh Sturm, the youth pastor, sitting down and talking about the sermon that your youth are going to hear that night. So we talk through the sermon with Josh. Josh gives you some points in the sermon and then talks you through some applications that you can talk to with your youth students. So the idea with these is that you would actually listen to them on Wednesday. So we release them on Wednesday. You listen to them on Wednesday, and then you have an opportunity to talk with your students about that sermon in the next couple days after that sermon. So it's fresh in their mind and your mind. It really is trying to plus the sermon and the effect that it has in your students' life for their discipleship. Each one of those podcasts is between 5 to 10 minutes long, so it's quick listening, and you can find those at fbchurch.org/preview. So today we're going to talk about teenagers, and there is quite literally no way we can talk about everything we need to talk about in even one or two podcasts, because it's just such a huge need. I've said this before, I'm a youth pastor. That's what I have been trained to do. Most of my experience is with youth, teenagers, and I have ministered over the years to hundreds and hundreds and even thousands of teenagers in different ways and shapes and forms. I was a youth evangelist for a while, then was a youth pastor, and was also a teacher in a Christian school for both middle school and high school. So I have a lot of experience with teenagers, and I love teenagers. And there's a whole lot that needs to be said here. But let me start with this. This is going to knock your socks off, Seth.
Okay.
Your socks that have holes in them. This is going to knock them off. So this is going to knock you out here. Teenagers, okay,
don't exist.
Okay, that's, well, you stole my thunder, man. You stole my thunder.
Sorry.
Okay,
just start over. I'll edit all that out.
Teenagers are not children. In fact, I would hesitate, and you know, it's okay to use the term teenager, but I would hesitate to even recognize this idea of a teenager. In fact, I'll say it this way. Adolescence, this idea of adolescence is a myth that our society has bought into, our culture has bought into, and it's a myth. In fact, there's a great book written on this called The Myth of Adolescence by David Allen Black. Dr. David Allen Black is he's a professor at Southeastern University in Wake Forest, North Carolina. Brilliant man, but he's written a book on the myth of adolescence, talking about what we've done in our society and our culture to kind of get at this reality that in most cultures and societies throughout history, there are children and there are adults. There's not an in-between phase. And what we've done in our culture and our society, we've created this in-between phase where we still consider these people children, and yet we give them adult responsibilities and we don't expect them to treat those responsibilities responsibly, right?
Yeah.
And we also, if you read books on parenting teens, a lot of times you'll have books that start with some kind of warning that, hey, the teenage years are really difficult and these people just can't be expected to do much. And you know, this is going to be a war. And I think a lot of people have a mischaracterization of the teenage years. Like the teenage years are this period in somebody's life where they're trying to figure it all out and they're trying to like figure out who they are and all this. And, you know, a lot of that's just not true. And God has given us a really clear indication of when somebody goes from being a child to when somebody comes into young adulthood. Okay. Now, I do say young adulthood. I would say there's different phases in adulthood, right? I'm not expecting a 14-year-old young man to be a 50-year-old man. I'm not expecting him to act with that level of maturity.
You don't expect him to hold his back and say, oh, my back hurts.
My knees today. the cold weather getting me. You know, I'm not expecting him to be an old man, but, and if you're 50, you're not old. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, there are different phases of adulthood, but it's really important to understand as a parent that your teenager is no longer a child. And God has given a really clear indication for when they go from childhood into young adulthood. And it's called puberty. God has designed our bodies to begin having the ability to produce children, and with the intention of coming into a marriage relationship to produce offspring. And that, you know, I always have said to people, you know, when a child begins to go through that process, they begin to cease being a child. And as they go through that process, they're going to need a lot of help. They're going to need a lot of patience and they're going to need a lot of love. But the fact is, your teenager is not a child. And so because your teenager is not a child, our parenting of them needs to change. Not principally, like the principles of parenting still remain the same. The gospel principles of parenting still remain the same. Our goals, or rather our objective, remains the same, but some of our goals need to change because we're dealing with different people, practically speaking.
What do you mean the objective?
Yeah, that's a good question.
The same and the goals are different.
Yeah, that's a good question. Jim Greenup, I was in a conversation with Jim Greenup the other day, and he was schooling me on the difference between objective and goals. And you know, corporately, if you work in business world or corporate world, you know, this is something that's defined for you, objectives versus goals. But our objective remains the same. If I had the objective of going from Spokane, Washington to Los Angeles, California, right? If I had that as my objective, that's kind of my broad, you know, the direction I'm heading. In order to get there, I've got to set some goals, right? Like I've got to find an airplane ticket.
Yes.
Or secure transportation. That would be a goal, right? I would have to wake up in time to get on the plane, to get to Los Angeles. So that'd be a goal. When I'm talking about objective, I'm talking about kind of the overarching aim.
Okay.
Objective. What is the objective of our family? What is the objective of our parenting? When I sit down with parents, this is one of the first things I ask them. I want kind of a mission statement from you. I want to hear what your objective is. I want to hear what your mission is, overarching mission of your family. And what would that be, generically speaking?
We've talked about from this book, one of the primary things for parents is that they're faithful parents, faithful to proclaim the gospel and teach their kids about God and raise them to be responsible young people.
I would say the main objective, though, is that we want to worship Christ. We want to love and please Christ with our lives and with our family. So then the goal then would be, because I want to please and honor and worship Christ, the goal is I'm going to be faithful in my parenting because I want to please and honor Christ. So I'm going to be faithful in my parenting because that's what Christ has asked me to do. I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to be leading my children to Christ, pointing them to Christ. I'm going to be instructing them and disciplining them because I those are goals that I have because I want to head towards the objective of worshiping and honoring Christ in my home. And so I think it's important for parents to remember the objective. And when we talk about teenagers, we want to continue to discipline them, but now practically speaking, that has to change. Like the way you discipline has to change. Uh-huh. If you continue disciplining a 13-year-old the way you were disciplining them when they were 10 or 9 or 8, right? Which it's, honestly, sometimes people don't understand that. I'll just be really blunt. Spanking has to stop, right? You can't continue to spank your 13-year-old. Now, some people will disagree with me on that. But for me, I feel like if a person is 13 years old, spanking them is not going to actually work towards the goal that you have or the objective that you have, the goals that you set or the main objective that you've had. It's actually going to serve to exasperate and frustrate a 13-year-old. And that's something that it's a practical change, but you can't keep disciplining the same. And I would even add to that, I think, especially if you have a son, the discipline and the disciplinary action that's taken against your son, it needs to be from the father and the mother needs to step out of that role. At that point in time, it's not that she's not ever involved in discipline or in those decisions, but the primary disciplinarian of your son needs to be the father, not the mother. And why? Why is that? Well, because your son is a young man and your son doesn't want to hear from mom. He doesn't want his mom babying him or talking down to him. He doesn't appreciate that. And he's going to take it that way. I've sat down with numerous parents with their young people, and this is a really common thing where the son who used to be very loving towards his mother and they used to have this great relationship, now all of a sudden she feels like he's distant. She feels like he's always upset with her, and they always have these contentious conversations and disagreements. And a lot of that is because she's still trying to treat him as if he's that little boy that she used to be the mother of. And he's not, he's a young man and he needs to be treated as a young man.
So quick question on that. What would you say to a single mom?
That's really good.
Obviously you're talking about, you know, the dad needs to be the primary disciplinarian, but if the dad's not in the picture, how do you treat that?
Well, I think this is where the community of Christ is really, really helpful. Well, and let me step back one even step further back from that. If you are a single mother, think about other male family members in your life. So is there a grandpa? So are you still, if you're a single mother, do you have a father who could be a good male disciplinarian for your son? Because we're not talking about spanking, but we're talking about, honestly, a lot of times is conversation and rebuke and, you know, taking aside and instructing. So a grandfather, a godly grandfather would be a good substitute for a dad, or an uncle, somebody in the families that's a godly man who could be a good, faithful, consistent speaker of truth into your son's life. If you don't have anybody like that, look to the church, look to the people in the church who could fit that role. We have a lot of older, solid, faithful, mature men who could serve in that role. Maybe it's somebody in your growth group that has a connection with them. And I think often, you know, we have at church, we have youth group and we have youth leaders. Some of those youth leaders would be able to serve in that role. Some of them might not be, just because they're not very old. I mean, they're college age and they're not really disciplinarian or authoritarian type people. They're more kind of relating, you know, their role is to relate and be kind of an older friend to the student. And so they wouldn't be the ones to ask to do this.
Sure.
But you might have one that would be good in that role. But I would look outside the youth group. I would look outside into our church community for those who could serve in that role. And I think we have plenty of people here at Faith Bible that could do that. I would also add this, if your son or daughter for that matter, if either one of them is, if they profess Christ, so they see themselves as a Christian, they've publicly recognized Christ as their Lord and Savior before the church community, then the discipline of them needs to follow the same pattern as Matthew 18. If they are a believer in Christ, what does Matthew 18 tell us? Well, we go to them first. And again, for a single parent, for a single mom, you might have somebody else, you know, who's able to do this role or help you in this role. But you go to them first and you bring their sin before them and you confront them on their sin. And then if they refuse to listen, you bring in other witnesses. You bring in other people. And I would even say pastors you can bring in, or elders in your church you can bring in and sit down with your teenage son or daughter and say, this is, you know, you're professing Christ, but this pattern of sin in your life has to be addressed because this is not what following Christ looks like. And if they refuse to listen then to those witnesses, you take it before the church. And so, yes, I am saying that a 14 or 15-year-old person, young adult who professes Christ and continues in their sin, they need to be taken through the discipline process. Why? Because this is good for them. Like this is how they are restored to the Lord and are restored to the church. And this is very important for them. I think that pattern of discipline that Matthew 18 lays out. And again, if people are saying, well, that's a little heavy, don't you think? That's a little serious. Well, teenagers are not children. Okay. I wouldn't do that with an 8-year-old, even if the 8-year-old, you know, professed Christ. The discipline is going to take place in the home. But as a person grows into adulthood, the responsibilities of that, and as parents, we're calling them to those responsibilities, they need to be treated as adults. They need to be treated as young men and young women. And I actually think that would be really effective for a lot of teenagers who, again, we kind of treat them like they're off limits for any kind of serious consequences. Even our judicial system does that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, hey, they can do some really serious things, but we're not going to try them as adults. That makes no sense to me. And I think that follows over into a lot of times how we deal with our teenagers. Now, you got to be really careful with this as a parent, because if you haven't led them into adulthood, if you haven't walked them into adulthood, you can't come in expecting them to act like adults and expecting, you know, kind of bringing the hammer down as adults, because you haven't led them into that.
Yeah. I mean, you can't expect it to be an overnight.
Right. You can't expect it to be overnight. Thing. Right. Absolutely. So
if you're needing to start that process, start it now and then work your way into it kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And I would say, that's exactly, no matter how old they are, it would be really good for you to plan a conversation with them and sit down and say, hey, and even admit failure, admit lack of thought through this. Like, you know, you're 15 and, you know, I think I've been treating you like a child way too much. I think I've been really treating you like you're still a child and you're not. I don't see you as a child. I don't think we should see you as a child. There, you are a young adult. And so there are some things that I'd like to walk you towards and help you, you know, walk alongside you towards adulthood. towards manhood, towards womanhood. And so here's how we're going to start addressing discipline. Here's how we're going to start addressing some of the bad patterns we see in your life. And here's some of the responsibilities I'm going to give you.
So can we go through some of those things? How would you handle discipline with a teenager? How do you, what kind of responsibilities should you be giving them?
Yeah.
Some of those things.
Sure. Well, let's talk about one really simple one. Let's talk about a phone. Let's just talk about, teenagers, often they are given phones, and not even teenagers, but even as young as 10 or 11 years old, people are given phones. And that's actually a very adult responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not a right. It's not a right. Nobody has the right to a phone. So I have a daughter who's about to be 12, and I have a daughter who's 10, about to be 11. So my daughter who's 10 comes to me and says, Dad, how old do I have to be before I can get a phone? And we were driving somewhere, and I just looked at her and stared at her for an uncomfortable amount of time. And she kind of started smiling. I was like, what do you mean? How old do you have to be to get a phone? She's like, well, how old do I have to be before you'll let me have a phone? I'm like, who told you there was some age that you have to be in order to get a phone? Who told you that? Like there's some age, like magical age where you get a phone. She's like, well, I just don't know. Like, how old do I have to be? And she used the whole, like, other people have phones. And I'm like, I didn't say, well, I'm not their parents. You know, all I said was, well, who said there is an age? There's a magical age. I said, here's the thing. Number one, I am your father and I love you and I want all good things for you. And that's a really big point. If your teenager doesn't actually think that you're for them, you're not going to have good conversations. Your teenagers need to believe that you're for them. And that's something that's cultivated. Your teenagers need to know that you love them. They may not reciprocate, or they may not, you know, always, you know, give that love back, but they need to know, you know, Dad loves me. I know Dad loves me, because that's going to help your conversations go a lot smoother. Uh-huh. If they believe that. And so I said, I'm your father, and I want all kind of good things for you. Like, I'm not going to withhold anything that's good from you. Okay. So here's the three things. This is just what I said to her.
Just gave her a little sermon.
So I said, here's the three things. First of all, and I was kind of, you know, I was kind of in a joking way, but I was being serious, right? I was like, here's the thing. Three things. First of all, you have to prove to me that you need a phone. You have to prove it to me. And that's going to be really hard to prove that you need a phone. Let's think about that word need. Like, need. I need. Like, I need water. I need food. You have to prove to me that you need a phone. Right. And she pushed back. She's like, well, do all adults need a phone? I'm like, no, not all adults need a phone. So I know some adults that don't have a phone. She's like, no way. I'm like, yeah, there's some adults that don't have a phone because they don't need it. Right.
So a lot of adults shouldn't have
phones. And a lot of adults shouldn't have a phone. So that's another discussion, right? Related to it. But
and then you told her to go listen to Tony Ranky's 12 Ways Your Phone Is Changing You.
No. So you have to prove to me that you need a phone. Okay. So that's the first thing. Second of all, you have to prove to me that you are responsible enough to use that phone in ways that don't hurt you and don't hurt other people. Because I want good things for you. The last thing I want is for you to hurt yourself or hurt other people.
Yeah.
I don't want that for you. And a phone could really hurt you and really hurt other people. And so we don't want to do that. I'm not going to let you hurt other people. I'm not going to let you hurt yourself knowingly. I'm not going to give you something that I know is going to hurt you. So you have to prove to me that you're responsible enough. And I just asked her, what would be a good way to start proving to me that you're responsible enough to do that? She's like, I don't know. And I said, well, how about starting to clean your room without mom and dad asking you to clean your room? She's like, oh. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, there's simple things that you could do to start proving to me that you're responsible. How about not treating your sister unkindly, like we've talked about? So we started walking through, you know, some of those things. She's like, oh. And so it's okay. So that's the second thing. You got to prove to me responsible enough to use it without hurting yourself and hurting others. And then the third thing is you have to be able to pay for it, because I'm not paying for your phone.
Yeah, I mean, the practicality of paying for eight kids'
phones. I've got eight people. And if that's the standard I set, I mean, come on. Let's just be real about that. I'm not going to pay for everybody's phone. So you have to prove to me that you need it. You have to prove to me that you're responsible enough to use it, not to hurt yourself and not to hurt other people. And you have to pay for it. So you let me know when that happens. The ball's in your court, honey. You let me know when all that happens. And so it again, she's 10. She's not an adult. She's moving towards that mm-hmm. in a very real way. I mean, you know, if you're a parent of a daughter and she's 10 or 11, you know what I'm saying? She's moving towards young adulthood a lot faster than, I mean, it's incredible. I put it in her court. I said, listen, here's what I want for you. And it's, I do the same thing. I say the same things and talk the same way when we're talking about dating. There is no age where it's appropriate to start dating. Okay. There's no magical age. And our society, this is where our society, our culture really is warring against us because they act like it's a right to have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, right? And yet, at the same time, they act like there's no consequence for 14-year-olds who have boyfriends or girlfriends and treat that irresponsibly. Like we're allowing them to have adult privileges and adult relationships and with adult desires because they're adults. And yet we're treating them like children, yeah. like somehow we can't, you know,
well, and I think,
hold them responsible.
Our whole system is kind of age based because, yeah. you know, it's like when you turn this age, you go to junior high, when you turn 16, this age, you go to high school,
yeah. you get a driver's license, car. Yep. 18, you get to smoke, yeah. you know,
and so it's like,
go to war.
It's not based on yeah. the individual person and their needs and their kind of personality.
Right. And so, dating is one of those things that's really, really hard, but I want, as a dad, I want to continually remind my children that I want nothing but good things for them.
Yeah.
I want to be a father mirroring the Heavenly Father. He is a good father. He gives us good things. And often he chooses for us things that we would not choose for ourselves because he knows better than we know.
Yeah.
Listen, our Father chooses difficult things for us. If you're a believer in Christ, the Father chooses really difficult things for you because he knows what's best for you. And often what he chooses for you is not what you would choose for yourself. And we're thankful that he doesn't always give us what we want because mm-hmm. it wouldn't be good for us. Yeah. And I want to be that same type of father. And so I tell my children all the time, I want nothing but good things for you. And if that's marriage, I want that for you. Or if it's contented singleness, like I want you to be a contentedly single. I want you to be a content adult. Mm-hmm. And we're going to help you as much as I can. I'm going to help walk you towards that. And there are going to be some things that I withhold from you because you're not at the place where this is going to be a good thing for you. It's going to hurt you. And I really will commit myself to not knowingly, you know, give you something that's going to hurt you. And so dating is one of those things that, you know, you have to get to a place where you're responsible enough and you need to be marriable. You need to be at a marriable age. If you're 14, you're not marriable. Okay. You're not at a place where you're mature enough. You're not at a place where you're financially, you know, secure enough. You're not at a place where you can really seriously consider marriage.
Yeah.
Does that mean I don't want you to like boys? That's ridiculous. Like you tell 14-year-old girl not to like boys. I mean, yeah, go ahead, tell her that, you know, that's just going to distance her from you. My 14-year-old girl is going to like boys, right? Or she's going to want a romantic relationship. That's what a lot of 14-year-old girls want. That's okay for her to want a romantic relationship or for her to want a boyfriend. It's okay for her to want that.
She just needs to learn patience.
Again, the what we've set up in these teenage years, it can be a really frustrating time. You got to understand that as a parent, like it's a really frustrating thing. If you're 14, your body is made, right, for the reproduction of children. And there's some adult desires that go along with that, that are healthy and right and pure. And if you're acting like those things don't exist, or if understand your 14-year-old's like he or she has these adult desires, uh-huh. but they're being told they have to wait and not live out those desires when in fact God has made their body for that. We've created this tension. Now I'm not saying that your 13 to 14 year old needs to be married. Obviously that's not what I'm saying. But we need to, I just say that because you need to empathize with them a little bit more, I think, than we often do. You need to recognize, you need to understand that what they're going through really is hard.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. And so I can not talk about it, and really hurt myself as a parent in that way and hurt my relationship with my son or my daughter, or I can openly talk about it and acknowledge the difficulty of what they're going through and come alongside them, and help them, encourage them, and affirm some of those desires that they have, help them understand the right place for those desires, help them understand the right time for those desires to be, you know, pursued. And I want to take that approach to it. I want to come alongside them as an adult. And so again, a question I would ask myself as a parent is, as an adult, would I appreciate the way that, you know, if I was being treated as an adult, the way I'm treating my son or my daughter, would I appreciate that? They don't want to be talked down to. They don't want to be patronized. They don't want to be treated like a child. They want you to understand that they're going through real difficulty. Now, you may not think it's difficult, right? Because you're 45 and your son or your daughter is 16 and you may think they're overblowing things, but it's a real, like they're going through real pain. They're going through real difficulty. Uh-huh. And if you don't acknowledge that, then they're not going to come to you. They're not going to be open and honest with you. So much to say, so much more to say. And I think we did a podcast a while back with Brian. We talked about freedom and, responsibility. Oh,
yeah, I think that was our second episode of season one.
Yeah. So that's a really important podcast. I'd go back and listen to that. That's this idea of you give freedom as they prove themselves responsible. You need to be willing to give them that responsibility. If your child proves himself in character and responsibility and you don't allow them to make decisions, you don't allow them to be responsible, you're going to really frustrate them. And on the other side, if you give responsibility without that character, then you're going to hurt them. They're not able to make wise decisions. Josh Sturm has been going through Proverbs with teenagers. And the reason he's doing that is because in Proverbs, there's three types of people that are talked about. There's the wise, there's the simple, and there's the fool. You need to understand who your teenager is. Are they wise in their choices? Are they wise in how they think and how they decide? Are they simple? So the wise are the ones who hear God's word, they hear instruction, and they respond positively. They respond appropriately. The simple are the ones who go along in their way without understanding, without instruction. In other words, the simple are the ones that they haven't been taught. They don't know. Yeah. A lot of people fall into that category. And then the fools are the ones who they do have instruction. They have been told, they have been taught, and they have chosen to disregard what they've heard. They've chosen to reject what they've heard. Those people are called fools. And it's true that your teenager falls into one of those three categories. Are they wise? Are they simple? Or are they fools? And a simple way to figure that out is when you correct them, when you have that conversation with them, how do they respond to that? The way a person responds to rebuke is a huge indicator of where they're at spiritually. And so we as parents, when we come to our teenager with a concern, you want to be watching how they respond. And here's the thing about a teenager. They are really good at manipulation. They use all manner of manipulative tools. They can cry. They can isolate. They can be angry. They can do all sorts of things to try to push back and get their way. And it's important for a parent to understand when a teenager does that, we have to be more committed to their well-being, and we have to be committed to living in a loving way towards them more than not wanting confrontation or not wanting ripples on the water. We want to treasure loving them and being a good father or a good parent more than just having peace in our house and giving in to what they want, because they can work you. And here's the thing. Here's how we endure that manipulation. We have to remember that we are not God. We are not God. God is God. And their resistance of what I'm trying to say to them is not about me. It's not about the resistance against me. It's about their walk with God. It's about a resistance and a war they're fighting with God. I'm just the representative. I'm just the steward. And it's not about me personally. And so I think this is where, as parents, we take things personally. And it really, when we start making it about us, we lose our bearings really quickly, and we give in, or we start sinning against our children or against our teenagers when things aren't going the way we want them to go. If you don't know how to respond in a moment, just walk away from it. Like, you don't have to do this right now. I think that's for marriages as well, right? When we know things are escalating, it's probably good just to walk away. It's probably good to take a few moments and gather yourself.
Probably say something like, "We'll talk about this later."
Yeah, exactly.
Don't just walk away without any explanation.
No, right. So you say, "Hey, you know what? I need a couple minutes to gather myself. I need a couple minutes to. I need a little bit of time to think, because I don't want to sin against you." And I would even say that, you know, I would say to my teenager, "I need to take a couple minutes because I don't want to sin against you. And I don't want to sin in this. And I want to be clear with what needs to happen. So let's just reconvene here in a little while. Let me take a few minutes." But all in all, when you come to your teenager and you have a concern, how do they respond to that? A wise person takes rebuke, and they're thankful for that, and they're able to look at their life and say, "You're right, and I want to walk wisely." A fool takes a rebuke and they reject it, and they hate that wisdom that you've given them.
Well, and would you say that, you know, like when they're kids, they just need to know that you're the authority and they're going to do what you're going to say.
Yeah.
But when they're teens, sometimes you do just let them do what they want, and when it turns out horribly, they're young adults, they have to deal with the consequences. Like, how do you balance that?
No, and I think, again, that's a conversation that you need to have. You need to be walking them into adulthood. So that's a really good example of what I mean by that, is if you're going to let them make real decisions that are going to affect their life, you need to prepare them for that. You need to say to them, and I've seen guys who've written letters to their son or their daughter and said, "Hey, you know, I now consider you an adult, and here's what that means," and spell that out for them, and then have those conversations. If you're going to let them make decisions that are real decisions that are going to affect their life, and they're going to have serious consequences for them, if you're going to allow that to be, and I think that's good, but again, that can't happen overnight. You have to walk them to that.
Gotcha.
And you need to say, "Hey, so here's what it looks like for me to treat you as an adult. I'm going to let you make decisions, and I'm going to let you make decisions that are going to really affect your life. And if you don't make the right decisions, you're going to feel the consequences of that." You need to help them understand that that's what the expectation is going to be. And I wouldn't do that with just any teenager, right? And here's a really good example: studies with school. Okay. So all along the way, you've been holding your child's hand, making sure that they have their homework, making sure what their project is, making sure, like, the night before they have a science project, you've been helping them with that science project, making sure that they get it turned in, right? Uh-huh. Because they come to you at 8 o'clock right before bed and say, "Oh, I got the science project tomorrow and I don't have anything done for it." And then, so you've run to the store or Walmart and you've got the poster board and you've helped them get things together. Okay. You've been helping them do that. If they arrive at 12 or 13 and then overnight you stop helping them with that, that's going to be disastrous, right? Because they have not built up the skill. So what I'm saying is, you probably should lead them towards that responsibility. So there would be different stages to that. I'm going to go from being, you know, treating like a child, and you have to show me everything that you have to do, and I'm going to make sure that you do everything, even helping you complete homework. I'm going to go from that to, I'm gonna help you schedule some study days. I'm gonna help you, you know, with some projects, but the daily homework, that's your responsibility. If you don't do it, I'm not gonna help you with it. And if you don't do it, you're gonna get a bad grade, and I'm not gonna bail you out from that. And then all the way to, and some of your sons, they're really bad schedulers. They're terrible at, like, writing things down in their little student handbook or their student book that they're supposed to write down their homework in. You might, "Okay, I'm going to help you with that this year. Starting next year, I'm not going to help you with that. Okay, we're going to draw a clear line of, here's how I'm going to help you now. Going forward, I'm not going to help you with that, and it's going to be all on you." So, mm-hmm. Again, walking them towards responsibility, and eventually to the point where, listen, man, I'm not going to be the one that's on top of your projects for you. I'm not going to be the one that's on top of your homework for you. If you get an F, that's on you. That's not on me. That's your responsibility. Again, if you have a student, if you have a young person that can't take responsibility in those simple things, that tells you a lot about their character. That tells you a lot about who they are. And some students are fools, right? Some students have willingly rejected counsel and instruction, and they need to bear the consequences of that. Some are simple. They need parents to help them to that and lead them to that. But I think that there are a lot of students that would be wise. They would understand. They would take that and they would walk towards responsibility and wise choices. You want to really encourage in any wise choices you see, and in any fruit that you see, especially as they are confessing Christ, you want to really encourage the fruit that you see in their life and the character that you see developed in their life, and be very positive about that. A lot of really practical stuff that we just can't get to and can't talk about. I was going to read this verse, and this is in 2 Samuel 23. This is at the end of David's life and reign, and he's talking about leadership. And it says here, "The God of Israel has spoken, the Rock of Israel has said to me, when one rules justly over men, ruling in the fear of God, he dawns on them like the morning light, like the sun shining forth on a cloudless morning, like rain that makes grass to sprout from the earth." That is a wonderful passage. I love that passage because it talks about what godly leadership does for those under leadership. Again, your young person, they might not make the decision to follow Christ. They might not make the decision. That's not something you can produce in them. That's not something you can force them into. It has to be a decision they make. And God is the one who has to produce it. God is the one who has to draw them to himself. And we need to be diligent in praying for our children and for our teenagers and realize it's not in our hands. However, your role as a leader, your role as a parent, my goal as a parent is to be a blessing to my children. I want to bless them. I want my parenting and my leadership of them to be like is described here, to be like the sun dawning on them, like the morning light, like the sun shining forth on a cloudless morning, like rain that makes grass to sprout from the earth. I want to bless them. I want to encourage them. I want them to look at their father and their parents and the leadership that we've given them, even if they don't choose to follow Christ. I want them to know that I love them, and I want my leadership of them to be a blessing to them, not to be exasperating, not to be frustrating. It'd be good for you as a parent to ask yourself, how have I been frustrating my young adult, teenager? What are the ways that I provoke them? What are the ways that I frustrate them? How can I put off those patterns of behavior and put on kindness and humility and gentleness and patience, forbearing with them? We want to be blessings to our young adult children. We don't want to be curses to them. We don't want to exasperate them or frustrate them. And so that would be a really good place to start for some of you if you're in a contentious relationship with your teenager. A lot more information, a lot of really, really good stuff. Here's what I'm going to tell you to do. If you are a parent of a teenager or, you're getting ready to go into the middle school years and you've got specific questions, maybe you have a teenager that's particularly, in your opinion, rebellious, or you've got a teenager that is just not listening. If you have specific situations that you'd like wisdom on and you'd like to know what to do, please contact us. You can contact me personally at pfunches@fbchurch.org and ask those questions. We would love to answer those questions. We would love to be a resource for you and help to you. Please don't be quiet. Like, you need to communicate. We want to help you. And there's a wealth of wisdom. We have a lot of elders. We have a lot of pastors that just have a wealth of wisdom. And we'd love to help you with that. We are all in this together. You're not on your own. You can't do this on your own. You need help. You need wisdom. You need the community of Christ. And so please contact us and let us know that. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Family of Faith. This podcast is a production of Family Ministries at Faith Bible Church in Spokane, Washington. Feel free to share. We only ask that you do not alter the content in any way and that you do not charge for it. Visit us at fbchurch.org for more resources, articles, and information about our ministries.